always seems to get involved, doesn't he?
I'm telling you, too many coconuts have hit him right on top of the skull.
Well, I think Anthony will be a great acquisition. He can do it all.
Avery, whose show is this?
And we're live. Welcome, everybody, here to the Lakers Lounge Podcast. I'm Anthony Irwin, senior Lakers insider and lead Lakers content creator for Offside. Joined on this fine Thursday afternoon, evening, whatever, by Kobe Price of the Southern California News Group, of the OC Register. And you know, I just got to come out and say it. The greatest Kobe in Lakers history, asterisk, to come on the Lakers Lounge Podcast. Thank you very much, Kobe, for hopping on.
Very important asterisk right there. Very, very important one right there. Thought you were about to say this, like, so the crazy thing is, if you didn't provide that context at the end, like, people would have been mad at me for what you said. And then I get hated for something I didn't even have a part of. I didn't say. I'm glad you put that on there. But I appreciate you having me on.
Have I told you I don't know if I've told the audience this, but this was back in the day. This was Thomas Bryant's rookie season. And Harrison and I interviewed him in Vegas. The Lakers were kind enough to help put this together. One of their PR people at the time, a guy named his initials were TC. He was sitting in the hotel room that we were interviewing Thomas from. First question that I start with, I go, all right, joined by on this fine day by the greatest Bryant in Lakers history, Thomas Bryant. Thank you very much for hopping on with us. And both those dudes fell out of their chairs. Just like, absolutely. Thomas was like, absolutely not. I am not going to let you do that. And TC from the back of the room spat out his water. It was the funniest thing.
That's amazing. That's amazing. No, this is the first time I'm hearing the story. That's incredible.
For some reason, Thomas had the Lakers very much.
I understand why. Now, setting me up like you set poor Thomas Bryant up.
My bad. I apologize. But thank you very much for hopping on. You've been on the show a couple of times here and there. You've been on the Great Western Forum with us as well. I always appreciate you making time for us and really enjoy your work. And I can't wait to dive into this one.
Appreciate you having me on.
Today on the show, we're going to be talking about glass ceilings and the notion of the Lakers basically being good up until a point. Are they a regular season contender, or are they, like, what can they do to put themselves into that higher class of title contender? Whether that's internal improvement, rotation tweaks, whatever, external improvement by way of trades or buyouts or whatever. We'll talk about that over the course of the show. Also, as always, if you guys have any questions or comments over the course of the show, hit me with them and we'll get to as many of them near the end of the episode as we can. And hit that subscribe button, rate button, all that good stuff. We'll dive on in, though. The Lakers lost to the San Antonio Spurs last night in, I thought it was really telling, Kobe, JJ Redick's opinion on the game afterward, saying basically, yeah, a lot of our losses look kind of familiar. A lot of our losses look kind of similar. And he's right. He's absolutely right. It's these teams with a bunch of athletes who are hungry, get after it, pressure the ball, turn you over, get out and run. Those teams have really given the Lakers problems, and not only have the Lakers lost to those teams, but they've gotten their asses kicked by those teams. And it's a trend that I think at this point, you know, it keeps getting louder and louder and louder and louder. Do you agree with it being a trend? Is it something that you are nervous about, that you sense the Lakers are getting a little nervous about? Where do things stand in that regard?
I mean, it was a trend before yesterday.
Yeah.
And that's the other thing. Like, it's not, and I think that's why JJ can speak so, or he, why he did speak so matter of factly about it, just because it's interesting how this worked out. So pregame, I guess I'm connecting the dots, but I guess I'll provide context. So pregame, I asked JJ a question about, I didn't ask it the best, I'll admit, but about defending isolations. Like, I think it was November 30th before they played the Pelicans, maybe, possibly. I think it was the Pelicans. They had a home game against the Pelicans on November 30th. Could be wrong. Yeah. But
around there.
Yeah, before that game, he mentioned that they're struggling to defend isolations and drives. Like, that was something he mentioned then. I followed up yesterday, and I asked about that just to see, like, what – I didn't ask the best, but I was curious more so, like, what has he seen since then, and, like, what specifically is not going well. And then a couple hours later, we see that being something that they just don't – like, they – in. I say all that to say, like, this is something that was predating, like, that was something he said end of November. We're now December 11th. Well, that was December 10th when the game happened. Like, something that's been going on for a while, and it hasn't gotten better. Like, JJ called it out the end of November, and it quite simply has not gotten better. People, I think, can see the rundown. So you can see the athleticism of concerns. I mean, it's foot speed, athleticism, physicality. To me, that's probably the biggest concern. Like, the foot speed, like, internally, I don't know how much better you can get. Like, Austin's not going to turn into
Stephon
Castle. I was just thinking of, like, someone who's, like, quick laterally, perimeter defense. Like, he's not going to turn into Drew Holiday. Luka's not going to turn into Drew Holiday. Like, defensively, their skill sets are more or less what they are. The physicality is sometimes concerning just on the perimeter. Like, it'll be so easy. We talked about this before the show. Sometimes it'll just be so easy to get into the paint. And there isn't much resistance or very little resistance on the perimeter outside of a couple guys on a consistent basis. That's something that just containment issues. That predated this loss of the Spurs. But in a game that had the most stakes of any game this season, quite literally. This was a, $53,000 game? $54,000 game?
Yeah.
Quite literally, something like along those lines. My mask, right? Like, in a game with stakes in your home building after the road trip, like, it just was more present against a team that, look, down the line, you have to compete against. You may have to compete against them in the playoffs.
I laughed last night when Stan Van Gundy said after as the game is like wrapping up, and the Spurs just got themselves $50,000 extra dollars. And I'm like, I don't think the audience cares. Oh, thank goodness. These zillionaires get a 50 grand extra. But no, like, sure. I think I agree completely with you that, so far as the rotation goes, if it isn't going to change, there just isn't really much that can actually improve. Now, LeBron kind of said after the game that guys being on a string a little bit better and the communication and that stuff and the execution of the game plan improving, that could, you know, help the Lakers collectively. But that's kind of why I have that notion of the glass ceiling here is like that there's only so far you can get to when it comes to, like, we saw this last year in the regular season where the back half of the season, the Lakers actually became a pretty good defensive team post Luka trade. And I thought there was a lot of like smoke and mirrors things that the Lakers were doing. And then you get into a 7-game series where a team is specifically game planning for those smoke and mirrors and they just start breaking mirrors, right? And you show up there with a leaf blower and a hammer, and all of a sudden the mirrors and the smoke don't really do anything for you. And that's what the playoffs become, right? And that's why this trend of losing the way that the Lakers have to the types of teams that they have lost to is really concerning. Is because, like, so long as Luka is a Laker, I mean, the Lakers in general consider themselves a rings culture anyway. They are the originators of rings culture. And all that really matters is whether or not they win a championship according to their own kind of internal grading system. And if that's how you're grading this out, the amount of success that the Lakers have in the regular season just doesn't really matter that much. And that's where I'm kind of curious at some point here, if JJ Redick starts to be more open to foregoing a couple of regular season wins for the sake of preparing themselves a little bit better for the playoffs. Now, I'm not saying Jared Vanderbilt is a better playoff performer than Rui Hachimura or than like Gabe Vincent. I'm not saying that rookie year Adu Thiro is going to be ready or more ready to play in the playoffs than the guys that are currently playing ahead of him. But that type of athleticism, that type of physicality, that stuff does tend to translate to the postseason. What do you think of any kind of rotation tweaks that might take a step back from optimizing their chances on any given night in the regular season for the sake of maybe making themselves a little bit better prepared for the playoffs? Is there anything that you could see that would help them in that regard?
So you asked that, like, part of me is like thinking like, yeah, that makes sense. I'm trying to pull up the standings as I'm talking through this. Like, I'm thinking like, yeah, that makes sense. Like, maybe you sacrifice, you know, it's not a concession. You don't want to say like, yeah, we'll lose. Like, we're going to lose an extra 2-3 games, but you want to be like, we're going to do this for the greater good of the team. And if we wind up losing to, like, if we want to lose, like, you don't hope to lose, but this is for the greater good. The concern about that part, like that kind of thinking, is that we just saw last year just like how small those margins are between like the Lakers literally finishing what, third last season with 50 wins and then what, Memphis had 48 wins and they were what, eighth or ninth?
Yeah.
Like that, like, so when I'm hearing, like, when I hear that, I'm thinking like, it makes sense. But when the West is that, like, right now I'm looking at the standings, like, the Lakers just dropped from 2 to 4. It's kind of weird because
in their last 10, they're 7-3. And because they are 7-3, they have dropped from the 2 to 4 seed.
Yeah. If they were 8-2, they would be the 2 seed. If they were, yeah, it's that. And that shows you, I mean, now, and they have the same exact record now as the Spurs. If they lost, if Rui doesn't knock down that game winner and they lose that game, they are 5th. So they could go to, that's how thin the margins are. So we're talking about going from second best record in the West to now potentially having to start the playoffs on the road. So that when you say that, like, to me, and we kind of saw this game play out, I saw this game play out the 23-24 season, Darvin's last season, of if you're not on top of it early, or even last season we saw this, if you don't stack the wins early, that can kind of mess you up. Granted, they went on a better run last season. Like, they picked it up earlier. There probably needs to be rotation changes. I feel like I've said this maybe like 2 or 3 times in the past 24 hours. But like some of the suggestions or ideas that I would have, they predate last night. They predate this month. Like, they're just things that, I mean, JJ even alluded to it. Like, there are probably rotation, potential rotation changes need to happen. Honestly, last night, that rotation was much different, at least in the more competitive portions of the game. And then, obviously, they went small ball the last, whatever, 10 minutes.
Yeah.
That was much different than what we've seen in previous games. Like, with the amount of minutes Jake played, when Gabe and Marcus subbed in was a little bit different than how it was before Marcus got hurt or when he was out with the back. Like, there are even rotation changes, but I think most people want to know is, like, do you sprinkle in a little bit more Vando? Do you give Adu a longer lead or give him more of a shot? Because the thing is, like, they're using, what, 9 players right now. Sometimes Maxie's the 10th man, you know, if they're fully healthy. I think more so it's about, like, replacing someone in the 8th or 9th spot, rather than actually changing, like, reconfiguring minutes or change the starting lineup.
Well, yeah, I was going to put you on the spot. Like, you know, you said that you have some ideas that predated last night's game for, you know, tweaks and stuff like that. Where would you start?
I mean, I think maybe it was on your show. I think it was maybe on your show the first time you had me on. Like, I said, like, I would suggest having Marcus in the starting lineup.
Yeah.
Like, that was my big thing. And it has little to do with Rui as a player. I guess give him his flowers. Like, Rui's really come along as a player since joining the Lakers. Like, he's transformed in a way that he went from, in my eyes, I'll be honest, like a player that, quite frankly, I saw the potential. I just didn't think it was going to, I didn't know how it's going to pan out. So, like, no, this is a very productive and very useful NBA player. and on a lot of different rosters, he could be that fifth starter or that fourth starter, depending on how you view him, alongside a different roster. But the thing about it is, like, you have to – it's the roster's the roster, at least how it is right now. And what the Lakers need alongside, you know, a lineup, a starting lineup of Austin, Luka, LeBron, and DeAndre Ayton is different than what, say, maybe the Houston Rockets would need in, for their fourth or fifth starter, or, like, the Thunder, or the – like, not – your after you get past your stars, the value of a role player, at least to me, can change depending on the context of the roster. And what I saw last night and what I've seen throughout various points of the season is the value Marcus Smart brings in terms of the physicality, the energy. JJ was asked, I think within the last couple weeks or so, like, you know, we talk about physicality. That's been a big talking point basically after every loss except last night. Last night was the first time where physicality, at least to me, was not like the leading talking point. And the
Cubans transition, right? They kind of talked about
transition and ball containment and point of attack defense. Those were like the main things. But yeah, like,
you know, helps with both of those things?
Yeah, well, yeah. Well, the other thing we were going to mention is like the physicality. JJ was asked that, and he's like, "Who establishes that?" He said, "In an ideal world, it's everybody, all five guys." But like, he acknowledged Marcus is the guy who does that. So to me, another concern, at least with the Lakers, is that even outside of like the foot speed, athleticism, it sometimes feel defensively, outside of last night to an extent, they'll be slow starters on defense in terms of establishing physicality, you know, really getting up into guys. It'll get them. They have to. That's what happened in Philly. They started off slow, but then they ramped it up and got it really going the second half. Marcus can establish that quicker and earlier.
Yeah,
For the team. So that would be one of the reasons, amongst others, why I think they should give that a look. Even acknowledging that starting lineup started well last night. Like, they had got into an early lead. They were, you know, a lot of ball offensively, a lot of ball screens, find the soft spots on or within the Spurs defense. I do think that at a certain point you need someone on the floor amongst the starters to provide that energy, provide that boost, provide that aggressiveness, defensive aggressiveness.
I looked at the numbers today. I recorded one of those quick little offsides videos that we've been doing, and I was talking about the starters. And basically, since November 18th, which was LeBron's first game against Utah, that starting group of him, Luka, Austin, Ayton, and Rui, they have started 10 games together. They are 6-4 in those games and are carrying a negative 13 net rating in those games. 107-ish defensive rating and 107 offensive rating and 120.7 defensive rating, which is not ideal. You know, that you're getting obliterated in minutes with your three best players on the court. Frankly, your four best players. Well, your five best players. It's just that they don't really fit. They're their five most talented players. They just don't really fit, I think, all that well together. And it's kind of funny the way that basketball teams tend to do this, or NBA teams tend to do this. They look at the season in chunks, right? So, like, it used to drive me nuts. We're driving and be like, all right, this is our starters for the next 10 games. And it's like, well, what if they suck two games in? do you need to wait the other eight? Well, this is now 10 games that the Lakers have like a sample size. I'm not saying it's perfect. Some guys are in and out of it. LeBron has been reacclimating himself to basketball, right? Going from baby lungs to grown man lungs in this time. But it is starting to get louder and louder and louder that starting group doesn't really function that well. And I think you hit the nail on the head in talking about like the defensive playmaking on that team and the defensive motor in that unit. Who's the high motor defensive player in that group? That player doesn't exist. So now the question is, do the Lakers trust Marcus Smart to stay healthy enough to be their fifth starter? I don't necessarily think they do. What do you think about that one?
I mean, I'm also talking about starting a player who just missed, who
10
just
games,
made right? his return. Yeah, missed six games, six consecutive games because of a variety of back ailments. I mean, they kept
It's like four different definitions, but
yeah. But all that to say, like, I mean, that's the concern with Marcus is that, I mean, and he acknowledged that, like, the last couple of years he didn't play a lot of games, so he didn't play, like, he wasn't playing, and the minutes he played weren't, I mean, you're playing on a non-competitive basketball team or in non-competitive situations, your minutes just aren't as rigorous as when you're playing for a team like the Lakers, who are looking to actually contend. So even when he was playing, those minutes aren't the same.
Yeah.
But yeah, like, that's the concern with Marcus. Like, outside of the skill set, I mean, he did have a great, like, an amazing shooting night last night, but, like, outside of some of the skill set stuff, like, can he sustain being a, I mean, when you're starting 25, 26, 27 plus minutes on a daily basis, because, or game to game basis, because if you're starting, you need to be relied upon, but can he physically be relied upon? That's something that up to this point has been, I'll just be generous, it's been kind of murky. And beyond that, I mean, we're only, I mean, if they're 17-7, 24 games into the season, like, we're not even a third of, or maybe we are a third of the way through the season. Are we? No.
They're 17-7, 24 games.
24.
That's right around there.
Yeah, yeah, more or less. And nope. And anybody in the chat, don't correct my math, man. It's been, those 24 games have been heavy. I would say that, and I don't want to harp on this too much, I can feel how much the season's affected me so far. So,
hey, Adam Silver and the NBA say that there is no difference in the schedule right now than there was before they started putting the cup into place. So, we all have to stop whining, and the teams have to stop whining about the NBA Cup and how arduous the travel schedule has been this year. We are not allowed to talk about it, according to Mike Bass. Now, don't ask Mike Bass about aspiration because it's a one-line answer, but with the cup, it is several paragraphs long.
That was, I'll let you have that. Yes, all you. Again, I'm not getting in trouble on your shit. I also just did the math. Yes, we're about a one third of the way through the season. Like, the fact that, I mean, yes, I know Marcus says that, you know, they're trying to make sure, like, sustain him for the long run. But, like, what does that look like for the final? I mean, see, I just got my calculator. I'm cheating right now because I got my calculator in just in front of me. But, like, what does that look like for the final 58 games, right?
Yeah.
Like, what it, like, are you, can you play 50 of those? Because that, or can you play, what does that look like? That's the, that would be the concern. At least with Rui, I mean, Rui has missed time here and there with various things, but he has been a more relied upon, like,
yeah,
night to night, you know.
He's like, younger.
I mean, he's younger. He has less wear and tear. I mean, the other thing is Marcus is not, like, he's not old, like, in terms of basketball, but he's played a lot of it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, deep playoff runs, like, basically from, like, what, his third or fourth year in the season, like, he's been in the playoffs every year. And then, like, not just in the playoffs, but, like, four conference finals, NBA finals, apparently. Like, these are,
yeah,
heavy minutes. And, like, those are intense games, so.
And the type of minutes that he's playing, too, right? Like, he plays hard. He is incapable of playing it anything other than a 12 out of 10.
Well, yeah, and I think, and this is something that I think this goes into trades, roster construction part. Like, they have, last year, it felt like they found that groove because so many guys who they relied upon, at least off their bench, and maybe not so many. I mean, it was Vando, Jordan Goodwin, even Dorian Finney-Smith. Like, their skill, one of their skills was just how hard they played. Like, that's a skill. Like, yeah, that is not it's not just effort. Like, knowing, it's effort, but knowing how to play hard, knowing what that looks like, and then being able to utilize that. Marcus fits in line with that. Like, hit, and that shows up. Part of it is, like, they're, like, guys can play hard, but, like, it doesn't show up in the same as Marcus, because that, like, if Marcus doesn't play hard, is he's not going to have the same impact. Like, Luka cannot play hard and still get 35.
Yeah.
Like, he can still have the same impact with, regardless of how hard he plays. Marcus has to play as hard as he does for his impact to be felt on a night-to-night basis.
Yeah, it does make me think that eventually, and I've felt this way basically all year anyway, but because of the availability concerns with Marcus Smart, and frankly, just to have another guy, you know, like, I just think eventually the Lakers are going to have to trade for their fifth starter. The question there, the issue that gets raised there is, there's no chance that the Lakers put a first round pick on the table until the Giannis thing is resolved. And you're not going to trade for a fifth starter without giving up that that first round pick. So that's the rock and the hard place that, at least from my perspective, it looks like the Lakers kind of find themselves in. There are players that I think you could technically bring in who might eventually show that they are worth giving a shot to in the starting lineup later down the road in the season. But you know, Rui has been a starter for a while now and hasn't necessarily done anything specifically to lose his job there. And it makes it complicated for the type of player that you can acquire who then eventually starts over him. In-house, though, like there are other options, technically speaking, right? You could maybe start Jake LaRavia, who is, I think, a higher motor defender than Rui is. You do sacrifice some shooting in that regard. Rui is a lot better per attempt than LaRavia is. But I think LaRavia is actually a more willing shooter. I actually think there's a world where he offers more practical spacing than Rui does. And by that, I mean,
I want to actually hear this. I'm curious.
All right. Well, so Rui's shot is very slow, right? Okay. Like Rui, when the ball rotates over to Rui, it takes him a while for the ball to go from his waist up to his shoulders and then finally out of his hands. And oftentimes now he's a very good shooter and I think he's a really good shooter because of that slow release. He's very, you know, but because of that slow release, I think it's easier for teams to kind of run him off of the 3-point line, which he is still a threat, a step or two inside the 3-point line. He's been very good from the mid range this season too. But because of that slow release, you'll have games like last night where he shoots 1-3 a game or 2-3s a game. And I think LaRavia, and I think we saw this with Smart last night too, those guys have quicker releases. So I don't think, like, if LaRavia was to start, I don't think you would see as many games where LaRavia gets up 1 or 2 3-pointers in those games than Rui does, because it's a faster, higher release. Now, it's not as good, and he's not as good a shooter. So, you know, we might just be talking semantics here, but I actually think there's a world where Jake LaRavia... Also, NBA teams react differently to white guys being open. Like, they're like, he's out here for a reason. And they just run faster out there. But like, I you know, there's also that potentially as well. But yeah, what do you think of Jake LaRavia potentially being an option if the Lakers do decide to make a change and move Rui from the starting group, but don't feel comfortable trusting Marcus Smart because of his body?
Off camera, I have a story to tell you about NBA teams reacting quicker to white guys shooting, but that's an off camera conversation.
All right, cool. I can't wait.
Bye, everyone.